Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602. Or toll-free across the United States, it's 1-877-753-3341. And now, with today's topic, here is James White.
I was just looking at the webcam and was sadly reminded of the fact that my wife bought me this really pretty shirt while we were away last week. Really pretty. And it went through the laundry yesterday. And Josh gets it now. I put on this morning and went, okay. Either I've gained 27 pounds since Friday, or this thing is half the size it was, and it was gorgeous,
too. Don't you just hate that?
Oh, man. It said it was 100. I didn't know rayon shrunk. 100%. It said 100% rayon, and man, I haven't seen cotton shrink that much. It was bad.
Wow.
It was sad. It was very pretty, too. So I'm looking for a small person.
So she put it through in hot water, then.
I think that's the only
way you can shrink rayon.
I don't know.
Who knows? Nobody knows.
It went by. So it went bye-bye. So anyway, someday. 877-753-3341. Welcome back. Chris Arnzen called me while I was away, and he said he had laughed for half an hour over the blog entry where I had put the picture of the angry Muslims. The religion of perpetual outrage. Did you get any comments?
You know, they've stepped things up just a little bit since then.
They're really angry. Oh, man. Well, and of course, we are getting ready to head back Friday morning, and I turn on the news, and I'm sitting there watching that Jeep Liberty on fire at Glasgow Airport. And I have...
Cherokee.
Oh, Cherokee. I'm sorry.
It's bigger than the Liberty.
Okay. All right. Jeep Cherokee sitting there on fire at Glasgow Airport. And I have stood exactly where that thing was burning numbers of times. The first time I flew into Glasgow, Roger Brazier and I stood pretty much right there waiting for Pastor Handyside to pick us up. We've walked through there to go over to the car park on the far side to rent a vehicle, which ironically was a Mercedes. That's a little weird. A little one. Little teeny Mercedes. But which Roger loved to drive, and at one point took a 90-degree right-hand turn at 45 miles per hour in that Mercedes, and I was awful glad at that point that it was a Mercedes. Because if it hadn't been, we would have ate this nice big stone wall right in front of us somewhere up in North Scotland. It was very... very, very, very odd to see that sitting there, knowing I know what's right inside the door, and where the easy, to the right was where the EasyJet terminal is, and whole nine yards. Been there, done that, and to know the place exactly where that's a strange feeling, very, very strange feeling. And
I've been curious about, did that terminal have like those concrete pillars out front at the curb like they do here? I'm trying to think.
I would assume so.
Because according to, and I only saw this once, one of the witnesses said that they came in and they tried to ram their way into the terminal itself, and he took three runs at it, and then finally gave up.
He got far enough in to start the fire going inside the terminal.
The Jeep actually didn't get into past the doors.
Well, but something got in past the doors.
Just the fire.
Well, either that or once the fire was.
Because they subdued the guys out on the sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the one was running down the street burning, and the other one put up a fight.
What incredible! What possesses people? Well, what possesses people? I was looking at a URL this morning. About a former British jihadist who was pointing out that it is the radical form of Islam that in essence teaches that you have the Islamic world and the world of unbelief. And historically, that had to do with Islamic nations and non-Islamic nations. Now, what you need to understand, I've tried to talk about this before, and sadly, Christians, just I see eyes glazing over, and ears closing when I try to talk about the Islamic Brotherhood, and I try to talk about Sayyid Qutb, and I try to talk about this idea that from their perspective, church and state have to be united. It's one. It's Sharia law is the demonstration that Allah's rule has been established, and the fact that these folks do not even like Islamic nations if they are not as radical as they are. And the result of the, all that being that if it's just this small little group versus the entire world, then you basically can justify in your mind the murder of non-combatants. You know, the, you know, if there had been a family standing there with little kids, because it was first day of holiday, we call that vacation, they call it holiday. It's the first day of holiday. So there are people traveling all over the place from Glasgow. Glasgow is the largest airport in Scotland. And so if there had been, you know, little blonde-haired girls that got run over by that Jeep as it blew up, well, that's okay, because they're a part of the world of unbelief, see? And so you are to attack the world of unbelief. And it's this, you know, and I think if the quote-unquote moderate Muslims really wanted to have their voices heard, they could make a pretty decent argument from the Quran and from Islamic history that that was not an appropriate application or interpretation of the Quran. They could make that argument. But they're afraid to. They're afraid to because they know that once Sharia law is established, these wackadoodles are in charge. You know, look at the Taliban. That you don't have theological dialogue even within Islam with the Taliban. Because the only way the Taliban knows how to debate is to shoot you between the eyes. That's the only debate they know. And there's only one way to deal with those folks. And I have tried to talk about stuff like that. And slowly but surely, I think eventually, Christians just start going, hey, you know, this worldview thing has something to do with all this. And, and that's what we've been looking at in the debate that we've been listening to as well. I, by the way, was gone last week. I was ministering. I had been asked to step in. Most folks know that back in December of last year, Dr. D. James Kennedy had a near-fatal heart attack that has really crippled him, and so I was asked to step in and do some teaching, which I did, and had a really good time. I spoke on repentance the first time. Second time I spoke on Islam. Did the presentation a number of you have seen me do on Islam's self-identification as denial of Christian truth, but I jazzed it up. I made it much prettier because the context we were in, they have these six huge flat screen TVs that are nice and close and very easy to see. And therefore, if you are graphically challenged, it's very obvious that you are graphically challenged in that situation. So I even stuck in some video, and it looked real nice. And then I spoke on John chapter 6. And, of course, the promises of Christ contained therein. And we also had a Q&A session that was that went very, very well. It was very interesting. And so we had a really good time and are back now for a while. Not that anything is going to slow down, because I just discovered yesterday I have the Sunday services at PRBC this coming Sunday. And who knows, maybe after that. So we are keeping very, very busy and have much that we want to accomplish. And, of course, the fellow in the other room has been busy, too, and hoping that by the end of the week, maybe by the next DL, maybe I'll be able to announce that we'll have the DVDs of the Shishko debate from, when was that? September, October? Was it October? It was October of last year. Hey, done in less than a year.
You know, anymore, that's a big deal.
For us,
I
yes.
got stuff going back 10 years I still got to do.
Oh, I know. And we want to get that stuff out. And I guess this new program you've got is much, much nicer as far as what it can do. So, this one has been tough because we're having to take all sorts of different sources and run them all together to try to make the whole thing. But we will have that debate out hopefully this week and people can get hold of that and watch it. It's, I think, a little bit easier to sometimes watch these debates than just to hear the MP3s and things like that. So be watching the blog for that.
I would say, and from what I've seen on this particular one, the different angles that the fellows with the cameras, and we thank them for bringing their cameras, took. This is going to be a bit more interesting to watch than the normal ones, because one guy had a balcony shot, mm-hmm. where he's almost right over the top of you two.
Yeah, he was up and, a pretty high angle.
Yeah, very nice high angle, and he's really got a great shot of the stage. This is a pretty ornate church.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. And I'm also going to include something that wasn't in the audio of the OPC church, and that is Chris Aronson's
opening
introduction.
Which you used to cut out.
Those are the early days.
I didn't really know this
guy that was getting up there. And
yes.
I'm thinking, oh my goodness.
Therefore, we don't have some.
Going to have a fit when they see this.
Oh, some tremendously classic comedy has been missed by many.
We'll bring that back and remaster bring the DVDs out.
Yeah, I don't think his opening the first year is on the tape at all, even on the master tape. And that's a shame, because that was without a doubt.
But I still have that, I believe, on the unedited master.
I've never seen it or heard it again.
And that's because the master that I created, I cut that out.
I would love to hear it again, because that was the first time I ever heard Chris Aronson do comedy.
And that was the first time I'd ever heard it, and it scared the daylights out of me, so I cut it out.
So you cut it out, yeah. And eventually, what we do need to do is take all of Chris's introits and put them into one presentation.
Because I have to say, I up to that point, this entire matter of debates was a very serious and sober thing to me. And what was being done there just really shocked me when the tapes come back and I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this? After the second year, I think I learned, you know what? This is important. This loosens the crowd up, gets everybody.
Well, it loosens some in the crowd up. You always have folks. Remember when I made the crack at the debate with Jerry Matatix? I think it was the first or second year. We were debating at the Coral House in Baldwin, and there was a fire going behind us in a fireplace.
Right.
And I made a comment about being uncomfortable this close to wood and fire. Ha, 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 ha. And,
I liked it.
And everybody laughed, except for Jerry, who has to stand up and spend the next 60 seconds whining and complaining, well, Protestants killed Catholics too, you know? And you're just like, come on, get a sense of humor. It's sort of like what you told me. You didn't forward it to me, but someone actually wrote in and complained about the nature video
thing. Two different ones.
Two of them.
Ones, yeah.
Well, but you said one of them actually sat around and counted.
Yeah, the one did.
The number of times. I guess if you turn the volume up really high and listen to the background where people are talking. I'm not even listening to the people in the background. The whole point in posting it was, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. You've got the little calf, and you've got the lions, and you've got the alligator, or is it a crocodile? Is it an alligator or crocodile? Probably a crocodile.
That was a croc.
A crocodile.
Alligators are much smaller. I don't think they got them down there.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's crocodile. And then you've got the water buffalo, the herd, coming. And the poor lion that gets thrown about 10 feet in the air. Woo! This is the most amazing thing. Someone actually sat around and counted. I guess somebody in the background, some woman or something, goes, my God. And counted the number of, I'm so disappointed in you. And I just want to go, get a life, please. That's not why I put it there. Good night. I'm sorry, but when someone writes, I'm so offended. You know, do you live in a monastery? Have you listened to people around you recently? I mean, that has got to be the mildest thing I've heard in a long time. Do you get on a train ever? I mean, wow. People, why do people live just looking? I'm looking for something to offend me. Wow, just take a chill pill. Cool out. Wow, goodness, enjoy the video. Go, wow, nature, neat. Anyway, anyhow, what was I talking about? Oh, people who do odd and weird things. Well, that was one of the weirdest things I've talked about. So I'm sort of glad that I don't get forwarded everything because it's just sort of like I'd freak out. And I, at times, you know, I do think about that. And I would post more stuff on my blog that would be of an enjoyable nature. But one of the reasons I don't is because there are so many people like that. And it's just like, wow, what is it like to live like that? No. Well, anyway, you'll probably get four more emails now as a result of my saying that. And you know what? I don't care in the slightest. It's called hit delete. It goes away, and that's the end of that. So anyhow, we are back, and I'm going to continue. Need to get the rest of the Mormonism stuff going. Oh, by the way, I need to find the URL. I saw it on my RSS reader this morning. I don't have it with me. I guess the Institute of Religious Research, which put out the best book, Charles Larson's book, by his own hand upon papyrus, which is the best book out on the Book of Abraham. I guess they have put a video together on the Book of Abraham and posted it all online. You don't even have to buy it. You can just watch it all online. And I need to get the URL for that because there are few documentable issues in Mormonism that are more utterly devastating to the prophetic claims of Joseph Smith in the Book of Abraham. It is just, it is an open and shut case. And in fact, I should go track this down. I would love to link to the best efforts that the Mormons have put out, to Hugh Nibley, and there's a couple of Mormon apologists. That's their big thing, is the Book of Abraham. This is, you try to read this stuff, it is the most absolutely muddled, hopeless argumentation you will ever read. It defines begging the question and arguing in circles and throwing dust in the air and dancing madly just to try to do anything to distract people from the really, really, really painfully obvious fact that Joseph Smith didn't have a clue what he was looking at in the Egyptian funerary papyri that he got off of the mummies that he bought from Michael Chandler in 1835. He had no idea what in the world he was doing. It is documentable that he had no idea what he was doing. And if he couldn't translate only five chapters of hieratic Egyptian, how did he get 530 pages of the Book of Mormon right? It's real simple. Most Mormons have no idea. In fact, most modern Mormons that I've run into, the Book of Mormon is sort of embarrassing to them. It's sort of that really weird book in the back that, well, it's sort of like the Book of Revelation is to some people, or actually, I guess Revelation is rather popular these days, thanks to Left Behind. So sort of like the Book of Hebrews or Leviticus or something like that. I've seen it, and it's got pictures in it. Don't know much about it. Sort of like the missionaries we ran into in the parking lot, the Provo Temple, years and years and years ago. And I started asking about the Book of Abraham, and they're sort of like, the Book of what? They had never even, didn't even know it was in their scriptures. You know, I showed it to them, and they're like, yeah, go down to that building down there and ask for President Bishop. He was the head of the thing. So
you know what we should do after the show today is on the blog, get that link to By His Own Hand Upon Papyrus. And also we have the Men Tract. We have that online.
Yeah.
And we should link that from the main page. Put it all together there, as well as track down those other links you're talking about. That would be quite a comparison.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy. There's this one LDS apologist. He's written some stuff on the FAIR LDS website. And, man,
Kerry?
That name's ringing a bell, something along those lines. Most amazing examples of how it doesn't matter how obviously wrong something is. Somebody can defend it. Not successfully, of course, but it does not matter. There's someone has posted at least one of the URLs and channel to IRR.org /MIT/Book of Abraham page.html, but IRR.org, you should be able to follow it from there and be able to track down the video. But anyway, good stuff. And again, the reason being, while I was gone, I was sitting there at breakfast. Was it breakfast or lunch? I forget which one it was. I think may have been lunch. I was sitting there, and I was having a conversation with a well-known writer that some of you may be familiar with by the name of Gary DeMar. And Gary and I were chatting, and my cell phone went off, and I picked it up, and it was Todd Friel. And he had made the comment concerning Jesus as a spirit brother of Lucifer in regards to Mormonism to a guy who runs some sort of pro-Mitt Romney website. And they played for me some of the comments, and I need to track down the archive link, I guess, to Way of the Master Radio so you all can go listen to the little section that I did there. But he was basically asking, could I come on and clarify and document the LDS teaching in regards to Jesus as the spirit brother of Lucifer, which I did. And then I posted those the rest of the comments on the blog. But there is just so much disinformation on Kerry Schertz. Yeah, that's who I was referring to. Kerry Schertz is the fellow. Google his name at Farah. Is it Farah LDS? Yeah, FarahLDS.org, I believe. And if you want, I mean, it's so bad. You don't even have to respond to it. Just refer people to it and try to read it yourself. It's that bad. And especially if you read something like Charles Larson's book and you've got the documentation in front of you, it's so obvious what's going on. And then read that stuff and you just go, you've got to be kidding me. You can't possibly actually believe this, but they do. You know, it reminds me of Greg Bonson's doctoral dissertation on self-deception. The epistemological ramifications of self-deception. You can deceive yourself. You can get yourself more deceived. Isn't that what Scripture says? Deceiving and being deceived, as Paul described it. And so, anyway, just amazing, amazing stuff to take a look at. So, not sure what that has to do with Islam, but we have covered a lot of ground already. So let's go ahead and take a phone call, and then we'll get back into the Shabir Ali Mike Lycona debate, and let's talk with Jeff. Hi, Jeff. How you doing? What happened there? I hit air, and now it's on hold. Did you do something to me? Mike, shows I hit air again. Hello,
hello,
Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hello?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I'm sorry. I was distracted. I was nitpicking your nature video.
Well, just turn the sound down so you won't be offended.
Okay. Well, see. I'm glad you're here to tell me these things. I have a rather unrelated question on the whole Latria Dulia conspiracy. I'm wondering if you've ever talked to Roman Catholics, when they say, well, I'm not committing, I think it's Latria, I'm committing Dulia, Hyperdulia.
Mm-hmm.
What in their mind do they think between Dulia and Latria, what would be crossing the line from one to the other? What would make it wrong then? I mean, because it's like, how can you even separate at that point without, as reformers would say, sophistry? I mean, what would be the difference?
Well, you can't understand Roman Catholic theology without a real heavy dose of sophistry anyways. So
yeah.
The church gets to define the object that is receiving the dulia, the hyperdulia, and the latria. And for those who may be listening for the first time or something like that, we are discussing Latin terms by which the Roman Catholic Church seeks to defend and deflect criticism of the giving of veneration to saints, angels, and Mary in distinction, they think, from the worship that is given to God. And hence, latria being the highest form of worship is given only to God and, of course, to the host, thanks to the doctrine of transubstantiation. And hence, you can worship the host in the monstrance or the tabernacle, whatever, because it represents God's physical presence on earth. And then dulia, which is veneration or honor given to saints and angels, and hyperdulia, which is the special in-between form that is given only to Mary, the Virgin Mother of God, immaculately conceived, bodily assumed, Queen of Heaven, etc., etc. And the distinction is a distinction that has no biblical basis, and in point of fact, both terms, latria and dulia, you can trace them back into their biblical usage, and both are prohibited in a religious context from being given to anyone but God. And they will say, no, this is why you need to have the church, and if you just follow the Bible, then there'd be all this confusion, blah, 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 blah. And so the church gets to say, well, the reason that this religious veneration, when it's given to God, is latria, is because we say so. And so you can be rocking back and forth on your knees, lighting candles, saying the rosary, and fingering beads in front of a statue of an angel or a person, and Rome, by authority, says this is dulia. But if you're doing it before God, now it's latria. And functionally, I would argue, personally, that especially in heavily Roman Catholic countries, like, say, southern Mexico, or in certain places in southern Europe, that the religious fervor of the worshiper of Mary eclipses anything that could possibly be said to be given to God.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. I mean, you can say anything you want about God or Jesus, but say something about Mary and you're dead. Or you're beaten severely. And so it's very, very obvious that it's an artificial distinction based upon the church's authority to say, well, you know, we foster this kind of devotion, and therefore we get to define what it is, and they do. And if you take the sophistry part out, you've got nothing really to go with anyways, to be perfectly honest with you.
I guess I'm trying to figure out when would it, like, Patrick Madrid look at a Catholic and say, you're committing a sin by how you're doing this to the statue or whatever. I mean,
I think the
do
only,
they even have a line? Or?
The line would have to be in what you attribute to the one to whom you are giving this religious veneration. Once you, if you functionally define that person as being divine, now you've crossed the line against the teachings of the church. But I don't see how there could be a line in the sense of the depth of your religious fervor.
It's all intention, even though man's heart is desperately wicked.
Well, isn't it all? Think about it. I mean, when you approach the Mass in Roman Catholic theology, the amount of remission of sin and the grace that you receive and all the rest of stuff is all based upon your intentions anyway. So,
yeah, that's true.
And that opened the door to the whole inclusivism thing that's infecting the vast majority of Western Roman Catholicism anyhow. So, that's what happens once you abandon the solid foundation of Scripture. There's really no consistent stopping place.
All right, so, cool. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Jeff. All right, God bless.
Bye-bye.
877-753-3341 is the phone number that Bill called as well. Let's talk to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi, nice to talk to you again.
Yes, sir.
And I'm sure you remember me from the email.
I believe so.
Well, of course, I'm sure you get thousands of them, but anyway.
But if we're talking, I think we're talking about Dallas Seminary and a certain King James Onlyist who's sort of nasty.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You hit it right on the head.
Okay.
I had asked you to moderate a debate.
Yes, sir.
But you generally don't do that, right?
Well, I have done it, and I would do it. I just think it would be pretty hard for me. Especially on a topic like that, to moderate a debate where I would want to be the one doing the debating, basically. It would be hard for me to sit on my thumbs, and something tells me that I would probably be taking numerous shots from the particular, because I know the individual you're talking about who would be the King James Only advocate, he'd be taking shots at me, and I wouldn't be able to respond to anything. So it would be a little bit difficult, I think, to just sit there and grin and bear it at that point without being able to jump in. So, you know, we'll see.
Actually, I would think, I mean, looking at it, and I know we've discussed, I actually invited him to call in actually a couple of times, including yesterday. Told him that I would be calling today.
Oh,
so.
Okay. So do you think maybe he's listening?
Well, it can't be because he doesn't know what's on, or that the phone number is toll-free.
The phone number is toll-free. That means no charges, yes.
Yes. So,
no, toll-free anyway, doesn't mean what it used to mean now that we all have cell phones anyways, does it? It's sort of changed its meaning. But anyway, what can we do for you today?
Well, one thing, and I guess, and you would know more about this being published as well with different things, but what I had mentioned to you and what floored me, years ago, as I told you before, I got involved studying the King James issue from the Pensacola Christian College video series.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you would find all this information, and I never could make heads or tails of a lot of it because this side's saying this and this side's saying that. What I did notice, however, was that any evaluation of it, when if you apply the same standards to each side, you will never come to the King James only position.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess what floored me and just is the part that just absolutely makes me angry to the point of the blood boiling is to have someone, and I will use the name D.A. Waite here,
mm-hmm.
who claims to be a Christian, who has published numerous things, but has things that are really nothing less than flat-out slander.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about he made a mistake here or there. I could tolerate that and try to look at that with grace, but mm-hmm. I took his little Heresies of Westcott and Hort book and then went to the DTS library and checked out all of those sources, and at this point, I have not found a single one that is not cut out of context, not
mm-hmm.
one,
mm-hmm.
out of 125. And he'll say, well, Westcott was an Arian. And then on the same page or sometimes even in the same sentence that he's saying this proves Westcott was an Arian, he'll turn if you just read the whole context and everything that's there, there's not nearly the degree of difference in theology that Waite wants to say there is, aside from the fact that smokescreen and really that is not what makes the difference.
Well, and obviously, if we wanted to utilize the same methodology, it would be very, very easy to go through the writings of Desiderius Erasmus, who was a Roman Catholic priest, who wrote a book in defense of transubstantiation, and isolate phrases and turn him into an even more raving heretic than would be fairly attached to a Roman Catholic priest at the time of the Reformation, and say, aha, and he's the originator of the Textus Receptus and the King James and blah, 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 blah. And we won't do that, and we can't do that, but that is the lifeblood of the most popular forms of King James-onlyism. And let me just mention in passing, the reason you couldn't make any sense out of the Pensacola videos was because they had people coming from so many different perspectives, all crammed into the same one, including a man by the name of Theodore Letus, who... at the time, I believe, was a Lutheran and was coming from a completely different perspective than they were coming from. But it was painfully obvious to me they had no idea what he was saying and they could not interact with what he was saying. And as a result, yeah, if you tried to find a consistency there, you wouldn't be able to find it anyway. So, yeah, that's what you're up against with King James onlyism is all you got to do is let a King James only advocate talk long enough to actually establish a position, and then all you got to do is apply the same standards they just used to arrive at that position to their own position, and it self-destructs. It happens all the time. That's why these folks don't do debates, is all you've got to do is listen to the radio program I did with D.A. Waite back in 1994. And the inconsistency, the constant contradiction, is all over the place.
Yes, and by the way, I would point out that in that Waite book I'm talking about, you mentioned Theodore Letus.
Mm-hmm.
Waite had a raving attack at one point on the last page or two of the book about basically how dare Theodore Letus say that basically Westcott and Hort were conservatives in theology.
Yeah.
Which, and I have read Letus's, was it the majority text,
mm-hmm.
the essays in the continuing debate, and... He said in there that for his day, Westcott was a conservative Anglican churchman.
Mm-hmm. He was.
But what Waite and his side wants to do is they want to take Dean Burgon. And I find this funny. They want to take Dean Burgon and say he was doctrinally sound, even though he held the same confession as Westcott
mm-hmm.
and Hort.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bad, but it's not even the right comparison because, and I've pointed this out, Burgon didn't even live long enough to make an entire text of the New Testament. So if we're going to argue providence, could we not argue that?
Hmm. Well, not only that, as Letus pointed out, Dean Burgon could not have been a member of the Dean Burgon Society named after him, headed by D.A. Waite. because of the theology that he held and the confession that was his. So when you have a society named after someone and that someone could never have been a member of your society, that in and of itself, I think, gives some insight into the problems that the King James only folks have and that Dr. Waite has. Now, I have you can go back and way back in the archives, and I'm not even sure if these archives are even up anymore. I'm not sure if it's something we have to reestablish someday, but back when we were still on radio, D.A. Waite was on the Southwest Radio Bible Church, and he and Ted Letus were both on for a few weeks attacking me personally. And we played their comments and responded to them. Of course, we invited both of them to come on the program and debate me, but they wouldn't do it. So we had to just play their comments and refute them, as is so often what we end up doing around here. And so he was contradicting Letus all the time. It was funny to see both of them on the same program where, you know, what is it? The friend of my friend, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, or something along those lines. It makes strange bedfellows to hear them throwing out everything they possibly can at me, but contradicting each other in the process. It's just the nature of King James onlyism.
Well, it's interesting. I just listened to that program you're talking about last night.
Oh, so it is on, it is online.
It is online. It's the September 2nd 2000 edition.
Oh, okay, cool.
And that one's still available, but you hit it on the head when you made the point that the real debate would be between D.A. Waite and Theodore Letus.
Well, if Theodore Letus was still alive, yes.
yeah, but, well, of course, at that time he was, but
yes.
That would be the real debate, but, you know, that wasn't going to happen either. And we, you know, it's just, it's one of those things we run into all the time. And that part of the reason I had actually asked you on debate was I figured that you wouldn't allow whoever to just keep firing. You know, you're going to have a strong moderator.
Well,
to say,
and that's the problem with most of these folks. And I know who you're talking about as to the King James only advocate. That would be one thing that I think might disqualify me as a moderator is that, yes, you do need a moderator who will not allow someone to engage in slanderous accusations and likewise to just spin in circles and waste the audience's time. And if I were to ever step in that situation, I would be automatically accused of being biased and unfair because my position on the subject is so obvious to everybody and is documented and so on and so forth. So it wouldn't matter if I was doing exactly what I should do and it was very clear that this particular individual was going off base, I'd still be accused of it one way or the other. So that comes into the picture as well. But trying to find folks on the true King James only side with whom to have meaningful dialogue is not overly easy to do, especially the ones who have big names and are distributed and things like that. And we've tried. We've had a few, on the program over the years, but it's not easy to get the, you know, Gail Ripplinger isn't going to be doing it and Ruckman isn't going to be doing it. And I honestly question their ability to do it, even if they agreed to, because they are accustomed to basically having the bully pulpit.
Well, you guys showed on that Ankerberg series, you and Dan Wallace both, exactly what happens when you apply the same stuff. Sam Gipp looked lost.
Oh, yes.
Well,
it was funny there because they could have had a debate between the three King James only advocates because you have the spectrum there. Gipp is the Ruckmanite. Chambers was representing the Ripplinger perspective, and then Thomas Strauss is representing the D.A. Waite viewpoint. And you couldn't see it so much on the video, but I remember very clearly, and this was 12 years ago now, I remember very clearly that there were a number of things that Sam Gipp said that you could see Thomas Strauss just wanted to slap him upside the head, go, what are you talking about? I mean, eye rolls and everything. But they had to be subdued as to what their differences were because, you know, Thomas Strauss is sitting next to Dan Wallace, you know, and so there were multiple perspectives being represented there, and there were multiple perspectives on our side, too. I mean, I would say that Dr. Wilkin, Dan Wallace, and myself, and probably the NIV representative, whose name?
Kenneth Barker.
We would probably, Art Farstad, obviously, we have much more of a majority text background and thinking as well. So there would have been some differences between us, and I think a couple of those came out. But it was fascinating to, you know, some of the background. At one point, they were trying to get the there was a glass table in the middle of the set that we were sitting at, and it was catching one of the lights and causing a reflection. So they're trying to put something underneath one of the feet to sort of change its angle so they could lose that reflection. And I don't think they knew we heard it, but the King James Only guys said, well, just put an NIV under there. And another one said, yeah, the New Idiot's Version. And, you know, stuff like that. So there's some, you know, little background stuff, you know, going on. But I will never forget Dan and I tag teaming Sam Gipp, because it was just so easy to demonstrate that if you take Sam Gipp's perspective, you can't translate any language into any other language. It's impossible. There's no way to do it. It was so circular, so irrational, just totally indefensible. Totally indefensible. The only way to defend it is to get louder and louder. You know, it's sort of like how the left defends itself. Just get louder and louder, shout somebody down. You can't actually argue the point in a rational way. And so, you know, but sadly, that's what sells out there. So we continue to battle it. So do you think anything's gonna come of your attempts to put something together?
I don't know, because let me give you a website and you can kind of monitor what's been going on, if you don't mind. I don't want to break any rules or anything. It's http://light, the word light, L-I-G-H-T, -after-darkness.org.
Okay.
I'm on there posting as Maestro. Ironically, when he came on there, he has decided to post as Servetus.
Really?
Yeah.
Has he raised the issue of Servetus's burning as an argument for anything?
Well, absolutely. It proves that Reformation theology is heretical and unbiblical. And
So let's apply logic to this. Since Servetus was captured by the Roman Catholic Inquisition and was sentenced to be burned, and only escaped the night before his burning in his nightclothes by jumping on top of the outhouse and jumping over a fence and getting away, since the Inquisition had sentenced him to die the next day by burning, and in fact burned him in effigy with his books the next day, then that would mean that Roman Catholic theology what does that mean about Roman Catholic theology? I'm trying to figure out what that means. Does that mean Roman Catholic theology and Reformed theology are the same thing, even though they're actually fundamentally different? And is he aware of the fact that even Philip Melanchthon wrote to Geneva when Servetus made a beeline for Geneva after his escape from the Roman Catholics? Is he aware that even Melanchthon wrote in support of the execution of Servetus, including all the other Swiss cantons likewise wrote because they were so concerned that this was going to establish the fact that Rome's argument was true, that the Protestants didn't care about the doctrine of the Trinity? Is he even aware that it's not Reformed theology really had anything to do with this, that his crimes theologically were Trinitarian, and hence that all groups agreed that he was wrong on those issues? Or does that part just sort of get missed?
Well, I don't know. You know, you have to have love for the truth to know it.
And you have to have a willingness to listen to the entirety of the historical situation to actually contextualize things.
You also have to be willing to let your prejudices go when you read things.
Ah, yes.
And so I tell you what was funny last night, a quick discussion. And in fact, if you look at it, all there's been is a lot of insulting. There's on his particular side to him, and it hasn't really been any dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I footnote everything. I used to do it. Of course, at Dallas Seminary, I have to.
Yes,
know?
Yes.
And so, you know, I'll put my deal has always been, and I take it when doing those posts, to try and put either links or a hard book reference that someone can go look up. I don't want someone taking my word for it. Do your own work, but this is what I know at this point. And if I'm proven wrong, which has happened a time or two on things, you know, I'll be the first to acknowledge it. That's good. I would rather be accurate than, you know, than win an argument at the time at the expense of integrity.
No.
And one other irony is that on the board, I asked him four or five times, and he never did answer, whether he thought the Comma Johannium was legitimate scripture, basically. And he didn't answer it four or five times. Finally, he popped up and said, well, it's in the Bible, so why wouldn't it be? Now, the part I thought was ironic, he has the one verse for the Trinity, yet he's posting under the name Servetus.
Yeah, I don't find these folks the hallmark of King James onlyism is inconsistency. And a good friend of mine many years ago, when I took logic from him, pointed out that you cannot define the word truth without using the concept of consistency. And so when an entire movement is marked by inconsistency, one has to question their dedication to truth. Especially, it's one thing when someone is in a state of ignorance. It is something very different when they are shown very, very clearly the errors of their ways. And it is frightening to me to see some of the people who truly develop what I would call a cultic mentality in defense of the King James Bible. Now, there are people who don't have that mentality. I've actually had dialogues with people that actually have resulted in movement on their part and a willingness to consider things. But there are some people who honestly demonstrate such a rage, such a deep-seated anger, a willingness to attack vociferously anyone, even though that person may have a perfectly orthodox confession and a long history of a defense of the orthodox faith. It doesn't matter if they disagree with me on this one thing, and that becomes cultic. That simply becomes a clear indication that there is a lack of grace in this person's life, and there are people who are like that, and it is amazing. And there's also one other element that I have noticed about a lot of King James only advocates, and that is the utilization of the caps key and the boldface font. you know exactly what I'm talking about, because D.A. Waite's books are filled with caps, bold, italics, underline, you know, just to try to drive home a point. And I just brought up the website you mentioned, and I'm looking at one of the notes from Servetus. Immediately I see just invented and a lot of problems and errors, and it's all in capitals, and that does seem to be something that's rather consistent with these folks. I'm not sure what it means, but anyway, well, we will see what develops over time.
Yeah, but one other note I'd like to make that I don't think is brought out enough on this particular issue is there are a lot of what, and there's probably a better term for it, and you may know what it is. There are a lot of what I would call decoy arguments. Now, it's not straw man in one, it is in one sense, but it's not another, because what they'll do is they'll throw in the preservation argument.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you obliterate that, it's kind of like, I mean, when you said cults, it's kind of like what it's like dealing with. You obliterate that argument because then you start looking at their authors that even on their own side they selectively quote, and they want to argue divine preservation, but then you look at Edward Hill's, and then all of a sudden it's actually divine restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Which really, you've lost the argument. So then they jump to, and they do this all the time, they will take arguments that support the majority traditional text,
mm-hmm,
and use them as arguments to support the TR.
Right, which, of course, varies in about 1,800 places from the majority text. Anyways,
right,
depending on how you determine which majority text you're using.
And they just keep jumping argument to argument, never really defending something, just throwing it up there, so that eventually they can throw up a line of things, and then at the bottom it's always, well, and you didn't refute anything I said.
You know, I've spent a lot of my life, even before the internet became a regular aspect of everyone's lives, there was something called a BBS. Now, I don't know what your age is, but Bill, but
I'm 37.
Okay, so I've got 7 years on you, and back in the day, you had things called bulletin board systems, BBS systems, and these were early forms of the of internet discussion boards. And you would post something on a particular discussion forum, and then it would be collected up with other messages and sent off to a hub and then distributed to other computers. And it was a mini internet in a sense, but not like the internet that we have today. And I spent a lot of time in my 20s on those boards on Mormonism and then on King James Onlyism as well, dealing with these folks. And nothing's changed. Nothing has changed at all in that time period. And you do eventually, anyone who does this a lot, could write the same paper where you document the methodologies that people use when you corner somebody, when you have them dead to rights, you have refuted them logically, the truth is clear. There are all sorts of ways around that. You know, some of the most obvious ones are, well, you hate God and his word, and you're trying to get people to hate God and his word, you terrible person. You know, you've got that kind of a thing. And then you've got all the forms, like you were just talking about, of saying, well, you haven't refuted anything I said. You just got done refuting everything he said. But I have seen people who even though everybody, for example, in the chat channel is saying, dude, it's right there, and they keep repeating. There's where you were refuted. I haven't been refuted. You know, there's no way to force people to be rational. There's no way to force people to be truthful. If they don't have a love for the truth, if their love for this belief is greater than their love for the truth, and remember what Dan Wallace said, and I'm sure he said it on the Ankerberg show because he's said it a lot since then. He said there are many people who are willing to trade truth for certainty. And,
he plows that into us at seminary.
Well, and there is the greatest example I've ever seen are people who profess an Orthodox theology, but then deny it by their behaviors, their actions, their worldview, their everything in the King James only movement. You show them where they're wrong. You show them where the consistent application of their own standards would lead to utter insanity. And they are unwilling because, in essence, what you're doing. And we need to. I've put this in my book, but a lot of people haven't read my book on the subject. And I put it out in bold letters. That's about the only time I put something in bold letters. There was to lay this out. I put it in the center of the page so everybody could see it. In the King James mindset, the Word of God alone equals the King James Bible alone. And so to challenge any aspect of the King James translation is to challenge the Word of God itself. And just as Dave Hunt blows a gasket when you challenge any of his traditions, because for him, his tradition is the Word of God. They are one and the same. It's one corpus. He cannot tell the difference between them. And therefore, you're questioning the Word of God if you question his traditions. In the same way, the King James only advocate, if you suggest that it is possible the New King James is a better translation than the King James, you are in essence questioning the Word of God to do so, and that's why they simply will not allow it even as a possibility.
Well, where they lead, though, what I always fear, having been young and impressionable at myself one time, it's not even something I wanted to engage. In fact, when you guys were on TV originally in 1995, I couldn't even follow you.
Really?
I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. I mean, I knew the translations read somewhat different. I didn't know about Masoretic text and TR and all that stuff, so I couldn't follow it. Well, then I had to educate myself on it and learn about it. But what always happens is once you're caught lying, this may be something you covered in Pulpit Crimes. I haven't had a chance to read that yet or whatever. But once you're caught lying flagrantly, your parishioner or your Christian person in the pew then has the question in the back of their minds, what else are they lying to me about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's why in my experience, and maybe this is yours too, but in my experience, King James only churches tend to be excessively authoritarian. You have to have a very highly authoritarian single pastor structure so that you can quell all questioning and opposition. And I've seen that over and over again. I do see some King James onlyism outside of those circles, but the primary churches that very much illustrate this thing tend to be highly authoritarian because they have to head that very thing off. If you're causing questions in people's minds, and sadly that's how the Jehovah's Witnesses have always functioned, trying to, in essence, keep their people in control. I mean, these folks are not running around telling people to read my books. You know, they're not playing what I say and then responding to it, because they know I'd be glad to come on their program. I have to play what they say and respond to it because they won't come on mine. What does that tell you? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. It's
that was rhetorical, I guess.
I thought it was rhetorical, so
yes,
I didn't want
yes,
to jump in
yes.
on it. But, well, I mean, the truth, just like you pointed out, can stand cross-examination. There are questions that don't have answers as well, and sometimes you have to go. It's the old Occam's razor philosophy that you go with what best explains the data, which, in fact, is why I travel. I mean, when I began, I read the King James. Well, the NIV has changed whatever, but I didn't know why. I just assumed, well, it's modern, updated, same text. I didn't know about any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And most people don't, but they need to. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I mean, if you don't study this stuff, someone like Bart Ehrman can knock you right into the middle of next week as far as your faith is concerned.
Right, and what I actually did, I will confess that your book was one of the last I read because it was at the time that was big, and the automatic argument that I saw out there was the assumption, well, automatically, if you were non-King James only, it was because of James White, which I thought gave you quite a bit of power. So,
well, I have been called the high priest of the Alexandrian cult, so, you know, I need to, you know, in fact, we need to wrap up the program here in a few minutes so I can, you know, get to my child sacrifices, but...
Now, when is our cult meeting this week?
There you go, yeah. And are you bringing the donuts this week?
That's another soundbite.
It's always a joy to talk to you.
Well, you know, and try to, the Dunkin' Donuts were okay last time, but Krispy Kreme are a lot better, and we have a much better cult meeting when you bring the Krispy Kreme because the sugar gets into the bloodstream a lot faster that way. So could you find some Krispy Kreme next time?
Well, I heard a rumor that they were secretly donating money to Thomas Nelson, who publishes the New King James, and I didn't know if I wanted to do that.
That's a publicly owned company. Believe me, they're making plenty of money. They don't need no donations for that. So in fact, it's sort of funny. We've got just a moment here. It was Thomas Nelson, since you happened to just mention them in passing. It was Thomas Nelson that I was corresponding with when I was writing the King James Only controversy. And there was this one guy at Thomas Nelson. I forget how he and I linked up, but we started doing a lot of communication with one another. And that was when I discovered that Thomas Nelson published different versions of the King James. And I remember calling him one day and showing him where their own published versions of the King James contradicted one another. And he got back to me after. I said, I didn't even know there were different versions of the King James. And there are. There's the Oxford edition, the Cambridge edition. And it was that connection that I used to let Dr. Price know about the problem, and I think it's Jeremiah 34:16 in the New King James Version, which I think since then they've fixed, where an English stylist actually went back to the King James and there was a mistranslation in the New King James because the English stylist at that point. Interesting stuff that took place during the course of the research for the King James Only controversy, and things that have come back since then. But anyways, let us know if the fellow who didn't call in today ever decides to communicate more with you in about a debate.
Certainly, and I told you I'm trying to do some sort of sequel to what you had did with King James controversy. I'll send it to you for peer review later.
All right, thanks a lot, sir.
Thanks, James.
All right, God bless. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Yes, the King James Only controversy is it's still there. But to be honest with you, I don't believe it has a future. I really believe that eventually that movement as a movement is going to be something that was people are going to look back in history and go, people really believed that? Yeah. I mean, there's probably always going to be somebody. But then again, someday there might be an NIV-only movement, too. Who knows? There's always people looking for something odd to believe, I guess. So, well, we didn't get back to the debate, but hey, there's always Thursday, and we'll see you then. God bless.
Contend for the faith of fathers.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks. Join us again this Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. for The Dividing Line.